Right now, it is time to bring in Jim Lynch. It's time for Cover Your Assets. Jim joins us every Tuesday at this time. Jim is an independent voice on Wall Street, the economy, sports, and politics, bringing many years of experience to those subjects and more. And how was your 4th of July, Jim? Was it a good one?
Yes, it was a very good one, really. It really was. CNN did a great job in terms of going all over the country, and they had a lot of great acts, and it kind of was very inspirational, you know, to get us out and about after what we've been through. And actually, they really programmed it for the last week, actually, you know. But really, it's so funny. I measure this by the fireworks. Last year, the fireworks began at about 7, and they didn't last until the next day. And then this particular 4th of July, the one we're speaking of, they just were minute, and then we had the big fireworks. And as I said to my son, Philip, who was asking me, what's up in your neighborhood? And I said, well, it's very simple. Last year, people just had to kind of bay at the moon with the fireworks. And this year, they were really much more together in terms of they didn't need that. And they were out and about, too. So it was lovely. It was lovely to sense that. Now, that's my interpretation, but it was very, very refreshing. How about up there?
Yeah, well, the fireworks at Lime Rock were postponed till yesterday, but they were beautiful. And you know what we've noticed up here, and it's very evident since the end of school, the amount of people in our area has increased dramatically. There's traffic again. There's lots of people out and about. You've got Lime Rock. You've got our movie theaters opened up. You've got Sharon Playhouse has now opened up. And in South County, Massachusetts, more and more of the playhouses there. Tanglewood is open. They're only allowing 9,000 people in at a shot. But you can just feel the activity. You can, you know, you see the people, and you know that people are trying to come out of this.
Yeah, very definitely. And it's the energy that they're using to come out of it. That's really the key thing, because having been inhibited for so long and kind of tamped down, now they're letting go a little bit, which is very healthy for the body and certainly for the mind. So, unfortunately, I have to say, I think we still have to be very careful in terms of other things, whatever they call them, variants or whatever. But the thing is that people are now getting a bit healthier mind-wise and certainly physical-wise by getting out. So God bless them. Let's keep it up. Let's keep going.
You know, it's interesting. We don't worry as much now. There are a few states that are lagging behind and that are going to be open for this new Delta variant of COVID-19. But in general, it's only like 5 or 7 states where we're going to look at possible hotspots. But the economy is rebounding in a way that's interesting. I mean, last week the non-farm payrolls increased by 850,000. Everybody thought it was going to be around 700,000. The unemployment rate has hung right around 5.6 to 5.9%, and the economy still has a lot of jobs open for people to take. That's what we're finding out around here, that there are a lot of jobs now that businesses are reopening, and it's slower than normal for people taking those jobs.
The thing is, it's a readjustment to the pandemic and what people went through. I think on the last show I mentioned, in reading about it and looking at certain numbers, a lot of people are beginning, are looking at what they've been doing in terms of their employment, in terms of what really constitute a lot of their time, to make money and so forth. And they're rethinking it, be it going into something new, going into a different job, women beginning to stay home saying, is it worth it to go to work and make money just to pay a babysitter? And I think what this means is business generally is going to have to be prepared to pay more to people to come and work, because even in the service industry, they're really beginning to say, you know, I kind of bust my butt and here's what I make, and I deliver the tab to the clients, the customers, and the restaurateurs really make a lot more than I do. And this fellow Meyer in New York, a great guy, he's created all kinds of restaurants. He was interviewed, and he pointed out that, you know, it is a bit of a problem, but he's willing to work with people to get them back, pay them higher wages. And I've noticed that periodically I read that some people, to get new people or employees back, are now beginning to offer 401k and health insurance, which they weren't offering previously. I have no numbers that it's big, small, or indifferent, but there's something going on like that. And hopefully the pandemic will serve people and the economy by making things more even. We found now, as reports have come from the IRS and others, that, you know, there's such a disproportionate amount of income for not just the billionaires and the millionaires, but a lot of people making a couple hundred grand versus the people who work to support. And it's not only in the restaurant business, but it's those people are frontline people in the health industry and so forth. So hopefully, the pandemic will create a situation where we compensate those who are on front lines of taking care of our needs to get more money so that they can save and they can be healthier. That's a hope. I don't know. I don't know what happened.
You know, I'm looking at an interesting story this morning, and oil prices, as we all know, have been going up. Gasoline prices have been going up. Oil is up close to $100 a barrel. Once again, it might go over that after it's been depressed for so long. But the big story came out, Jim, and I don't know how this will affect our economy and everybody else's economy. The OPEC meetings were canceled because two or three countries, don't want to follow the general production rules that are coming up. So instead of having a meeting and showing disharmony, they were canceled. Can you imagine what would happen with oil prices if for some reason OPEC nations really started going out of their own and not controlling prices as one big block?
I look forward to it. Saudi Arabia has been a kingpin in this, and it's a nation of less repute. The thing is, it's not appropriate that any group basically controls the price, because, you know, we have fair trade agreements, we have this, we have that, and there's no reason to allow a monopoly to occur. I think the reality is a couple of nations that said, no way, Jose, were kind of realizing that the U.S. could take a very different stance in terms of the price of oil if OPEC continues to, you know, pressure it upward. We have a huge reserve of oil, number one. We are a big purchaser of oil, number two. And all we have to do is start shopping around for oil. And then the other thing is, and I'm certain we have a few oil traders in our midst, start trading oil and start offering it at lower prices and basically destabilizing in a brief way the price of oil. So I think it's very good that a couple have faded. We'll see. I mean, I'm speculating in what I said, but I do know it's a potential. I really felt, I think last year it was, when they were jacking up the prices unnecessarily, that, you know, we should get in there and trade it. Because the thing is, when you're trading something day in and day out, you can influence the price. It's not, oh, this is the price and that's the end of it. You get a trader in there and he says, oh, you want it at 75 an ounce? Fine, I'll give it to you at 73.5 on the spot. So a lot of things are going on courtesy of the pandemic and courtesy of people taking a second look at some of these nations who do have a lot of oil and make a lot of money from the oil. I think the kiss of death was when Khashoggi was killed by the Saudis, and it woke people up to the fact that these folks are not worthy of us really trading with them at any price. But we'll see. You know, all this stuff is in flux. The key is that Biden continues to unify the European Union, etc., and Japan, and do his best with China and Russia, but he needs to continue to work with and strengthen our allies so that we have a united front, firstly and most importantly, with Russia, because they're a small country, they're wealthy and so forth, but as we've seen in the Ukraine, they can cause a lot of problems. And as we've seen with cyber stuff, they've really been hindering us with their attacks on our businesses. We can handle that. We've got it. But we have to focus as a group, the European Union, ourselves, Japan, Korea, and Biden is good as a diplomat, and I'm certain he'll be able to continue to strengthen those relationships.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned Bitcoin, and we talk about Bitcoin, but you know, Bitcoin. I look at Bitcoin, and I see one of the stories now coming out of Seneca Lake in New York. There is a factory. It's not a factory; it's a building that houses 8,000 computers, and those 8,000 computers operate solely on Bitcoin. And what they're finding out that they use so much energy and so much gas-fired energy that it has raised the temperature of Seneca Lake to where it's actually warm. And now, finally, people are really realizing that behind the Bitcoin, success, it is really a devastating part to our environment because they need so many computers running 24 hours a day, consuming so much energy that it really leaves a horrible, horrible carbon footprint, and uses more and more and more energy. I'm interested to see how this will act in the future, whether people will start to pull away from Bitcoin or not.
Well, the thing is, the problem is they use fossil fuels, which basically creates a very negative effect for the atmosphere. And I think in the case of these folks up there, the lake is like 70 degrees when it should be 58 degrees. I think eventually the Environmental Protection Agency is going to come in and try to manage them, if not shut them down, because they are causing a very big problem with the environment. The other thing is they're using too much. They're using too much energy for something that is a wafer. It's something that is on the computer. It doesn't feed anybody. It doesn't help anybody. It doesn't add to business. So eventually, in my opinion, the federal government is going to step in and say, okay, boys, we're going to change the way you do this stuff. And it's going to begin to limit the amount of Bitcoin they can produce and stymie it. It's also, I think, other regulatory agencies in the federal government are going to come in and say, wait a second, you know, there's no disclosure. We don't know what you're doing. We don't know who you're selling to. There's already been instances where money has been laundered through Bitcoin. The last big one was in terms of people who basically were shutting down our plants unless they were given money and the money they wanted in Bitcoin. So it's disastrous, okay, for the economy. It's already proving that in this little place. Two, it's disastrous in terms of people who really don't know what they're doing buying this thing, which it was at $60,000 like a couple of weeks ago. Now it's $34,000. In the beginning, a year or so ago, it was $6,000, and then it went to $20,000. This is like a dream, okay? So in terms of someone investing in them, it's not an investment. It's a total speculation, which if you bought it at $30,000, it could be $22,000 the next day. There's no control. There's no restriction. No federal body is monitoring and regulating who's trading in this. So, and lastly, the federal government, like the Chinese government, was already doing this. They're limiting the Bitcoin. We will eventually limit it. And if there's going to be a digital currency, it'll be on a government level, which will be controlled. But right now, Bitcoin is in the hands of people who are making the quick buck. Their only interest is create it, sell it, goodbye, I'm gone. And in the process, they're using too much power. And as I think we are beginning to notice a little more, the environment is burning on its own. So we don't need more pressure on our environment. That alone should shut these people down.
Now, I have someone who sent me an email, and it's something I never really thought about. And we only have about 7 or 8 minutes left. They want to know what are the differences between the Dow Jones Industrial Average, NASDAQ. You know, what are the differences? Aren't they both dealing with the same things, or are there major differences between the Dow and the NASDAQ?
Very simplistically, the Dow is made up of 30 companies. They tend to be very high-grade companies that have been outstanding for a long time. The NASDAQ is made up of hundreds of companies, many of which are, they're good companies, but they're not as strong economically as the 30 Dow companies. They also, however, possess a little bit more of a speculative aspect to them, in that they tend to be in high growth areas. They tend to be in innovative areas where the movements will generally be greater than the Dow. And the NASDAQ more and more has generated over the years a greater interest. That's oversimplifying it, but and the NASDAQ has some very good companies, don't get me wrong, but they have a lot of other companies that are less than top grade, but yet strong companies, particularly companies that are innovative and very growth-oriented.
So what comes out of what you're saying to the person that inquired is the people that follow the Dow Jones Industrial Average, thinking that it's the barometer for the economy, basically it comes down to 30 big businesses and nothing more, and it's not the bellwether that people want it to be.
That's exactly right. And part of it is that we have what we call mutual funds for stocks. And they, many of them, they concentrate more and more in the Dow than other things. Well, they have other things as well. The NASDAQ is, I think, more representative of what's going on in the overall economy. That's not a slight on the Dow, but NASDAQ has many more companies. Many more of them are diverse in various industries. And so I think the NASDAQ is probably more of a significance than the Dow. And if you look at the leadership in the last market, you have to track it, of course. You'll find that the NASDAQ was really the leader because they have some of these great companies that really move.
So we're almost out of time, but that's a question that's been asked of me, and I'm not the person to explain it, but it really lays it out in spades about how complicated the economy is for the average American to follow and look for the safest way to invest in the future.
Well, the safest way for the average American is to buy a very good mutual fund, such as John Bogle's since gone Vanguard. And the key is, depending on how much money you have, unless you have a very good investment advisor, you really can't be dabbling on your own in stocks. You don't have the time. You don't have the ability to figure out which is better than which is which has got a greater outlook. So I'll have a couple other fun suggestions. Now, that goes for the average citizen. Somebody has got millions of dollars. You got to get an advisor, or you got to spend the time. And, you know, if you've got millions of dollars, you probably have the time to evaluate companies. But for the average investor, you're probably best off with something like a Vanguard fund.
All right. Jim, it's always interesting and fun to talk to you. And the Mets totally annihilated the Yankees this week. Hopefully the Yankees will get up off the floor.
Hopefully not, but that's... That's where I come from. I lived too many years with the Yankees, first beating the Dodgers and then the Mets.
Well,
good to talk to you, Marshall.
Take care, Jim. We'll speak to you next week.
Take care. You have a good week. I got you. Bye-bye.
Jim Lynch, and Cover Your Assets this morning here on Robinhood Radio.